This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits. Enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform, Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy Special Edition podcast on Star Trek Into Darkness.
From far beyond the galaxies, I've journeyed to this place to study the behavior patterns of the human race. And I find them highly illogical. Girl meets boy. They fall in love. She says he's everything she's dreamed of.
But when they get married, before he's aware, she changes his habits, the way he combs his hair. She changes him to someone he's never been, and then complains he's not like other men. Now really, I find this most
Hello,
illogical.
Welcome to the special edition iFanboy podcast. We're talking about Star Trek Into Darkness. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Paul Montgomery.
Live long and prosper.
And joining us is iFanboy staff writer and big-time Star Trek fan Mike Romo.
Live long and prosper again.
We are from iFanboy.com. We talk about comics, but we also like to talk about the big summer movie. Well, not just summer movies, but the big movies that come out related even tangentially to comics. Star Trek is one of them. We talked about the original remake film in 2009. Me and Josh and Ron talked about it way back when. Loved the hell out of it. And now we're back for the sequel 4 years later. So, quick warning, there will be spoilers. There will even be spoilers for original cast films, because I don't think there's any way to talk about this one. I'm trying not to spoil it right now.
Yeah, I think we might have already spoiled it.
So there will also be spoilers for
one of the films with the original cast, whose name I won't mention because the name will be a spoiler. So if you haven't seen,
there's someone who's doing this in that weird Star Wars order, the Hatchet order or whatever, where you're supposed to watch, you know, Star Wars like machete. In that weird, yeah, the machete order. That's what it is.
So if you don't want to be spoiled by those, you might want to pause the show, come back. But there's no, as Paul mentioned in his written review, normally his written reviews on iFanboy are spoiler free. But there's really no way to talk about this film without talking about spoilers.
So. I tried. I really did. But there's no meaningful way to talk about this without saying that this movie is stuck in the shadow of The Wrath of Khan, the second original series Star Trek film.
So before we get into this one, let's just get it out of the way. Did we all enjoy the first film?
Absolutely.
The J.J. Abrams first film.
I saw the first film three times in the theaters.
Yeah.
And,
I think that's same for me. Yeah, so three times.
Huge fan of it. Really enjoyed it. And I'll just be quiet because I know I'll be talking a lot. So, Mike, yeah, I loved it.
And Mike, also, you should tell everyone you're also like a really big Star Trek fan.
Well, I mean, I grew up watching Star Trek, the original series, every day with my dad at 6 p.m. on Channel 2 in San Francisco. Like, I've seen every episode there is of the show. I've watched the cartoons. I've seen all the movies several million times. I used to play D&D to the soundtrack. So, like, so Star Trek and all of its many iterations, I've been to way too many Star Trek conventions to actually tell you honestly the number, but yeah, Star Trek's been is a huge part of my life, and so it's been really, really interesting to see how this is impacting people or not.
And Mike and I saw this together last night in Los Angeles, and when you came out of the film, you were like, "It's funny because Star Trek and Superman are like your two big things, and those are the two movies we're going to be talking about."
Now. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be a rocky summer for Mike. Emotion roller coaster.
Yeah.
And Paul, let's get your quick Star Trek background. Do you have a Star Trek background?
Yeah, for me, I mean, I'm a little bit younger, so I grew up with Next Gen. I was watching Next Generation with my dad, and we went to the Next Generation movies, the first two anyway. I think it got weird after we saw Borg sex together in First Contact, but a little awkward there. But no, and I had all the action figures, I had the bridge set and everything, and wow. So that was my touchstone, was the Next Generation cast, and then I've watched the other stuff, but I've come to really love Star Trek, especially in the movies for the original cast. So the motion picture and Wrath of Khan and everything after.
And for me, being in the middle age-wise, I grew up on the films, on the original cast films. And then I would see the reruns of the show on like late night TV, and then the Next Generation came along. So I was a bigger fan than I realized. I was sort of explaining this to my girlfriend the other night as we were watching the original film in preparation, that I had a lot of Star Trek stuff. In my room as a kid, a lot of toys, I had the life-size Spock poster, you know, I had a lot of things, more than I think about now when I remember back then. So I think we're all pretty big Star Trek fans who loved the
first.
And
I suspect that some of that history with the mythology of Star Trek is kind of detrimental to fully enjoying this film.
And I think that's I fall with it. It's a film that I came out of very conflicted about, because there were parts of this movie I absolutely love.
Yeah,
I think there are great scenes. There are great sequences. There's wonderful character moments. I think the cast is still stellar. Chris Pine continues to be a revelation as Kirk. But yes. Then there are parts of it, I think, that really fell flat.
Well, that's the interesting thing about Star Trek, right? And that's why, in my mind, it's best as a TV show. Because when you go back on the bridge and you see that ship, it for me, it's like coming home. And it's like you just their interaction as an overall cast, the chemistry is so fantastic that it's just a pleasure to watch. So as a movie, just going moment to moment, beat to beat, character to character, I found it extremely enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Just because I rarely get to go back to Star Trek. It's just not a part of my life like it used to be. So when I see the ship, I get goosebumps. When I see different set pieces, I get really excited and try to imagine where in the ship it is. But I woke up this morning, and I think, Connor, you nailed it. I loved aspects to it. I loved the moments. But as a Star Trek fan, I think there's going to be a lot of very conflicted fan people out there. I think for people who don't have a history with any of the films, I hope they really had a great time with it. But as a person who's steeped in the lore, you can't help but think that they kind of weaseled out on this one in a weird way.
I think that's true. And I think the other thing is one of the reasons the first film was so successful is because it was so divorced from what we knew before.
Yes.
Whereas this one veers into very familiar territory in some instances, and it can't help but suffer in that sense. as
there's definitely a sense of one step forward, two steps back. And what I really loved and what was so elegant about the 2009 film was that, yeah, it is divorced from that. It's a whole new time stream. But it also, you know, for the fans who were, you know, really attached, and there are, I mean, this is like a thing that it's very famous to be a fan of, you know, like it's a very popular thing that people are popularly devoted to. So that time stream, that stuff still exists. It's not a total retcon. It's just, it's a different timeline. It's an alternate universe. And so you can have your cake and eat it too. And you get both worlds.
I think with the start, I was actually at a convention very recently because it was one of the 25th anniversary of the Next Generation. And it was one of those weird shows where the entire cast came back for Next Generation. So it was like, I had to see that. And the vitriol that the regular Star Trek fans feel for this whole new reboot was visceral. They were like, well, if they were ever going to do a Next Generation reboot, do you think you would possibly be part of it? And the cast was like, you guys are crazy. That'll never happen. Accept it and move on. And I can imagine that the hardcore fans who really have that sort of idealism, because this, you know, this is a very idealistic film, but it's mostly an action film. Yeah. When they see that, oh, so Star Trek II is Star Trek II all over again.
Yeah.
They're going to feel betrayed at, because there's only going to be three films, right? Yeah. And who knows what's going to happen after. If you're going to do this, why literally go back to the well and try to reproduce in a you know, quote unquote mirror universe almost, you know, the opposite characters doing the opposite things. Why try to reproduce these beats that are so iconic for so many thousands of fans?
Millions of fans.
Like, beat per beat, line for line.
Shot for shot, even in those instances. It was...
Yeah.
When Spock was running down that corridor to get Kirk, I felt that familiar sense of dread, and yet I was irritated that I was feeling that sense of dread.
Well, before we dive deep into that, let's back up for 1 second and just give a quick overview of what the story was. Basically, we're a little further ahead in the timeline. The crew's been together for a while. Kirk is the captain of the Enterprise.
He hasn't lost anybody.
I love that they're sticking with those uniforms.
Yeah.
I love it because they're completely not practical at all. But so they get in trouble. In the cold open, they violate the Prime Directive, which I loved the cold open sequence.
The cold open was fantastic. It was like being right back in the old TV series. It was pulpy, comic booky, and just explosive. Super fun.
So they violate the Prime Directive. They get sent, summoned back to Earth. Pike, who is
he's a Rear Admiral.
Oh, he's a Rear Admiral. He busts Kirk and Spock down a rank. So now Pike's back in charge of the Enterprise. But while that's happening, mysterious Sherlock Holmes blows up a bomb in London, and as a terrorist attack on one of the installations of the Federation. And so all hands are on deck for this red alert to go find this terrorist. John Harrison blows up a building. They have to go find him. He's on Kronos, the Klingon homeworld.
Right,
and then that's basically the impetus for the plot.
And then RoboCop tells Captain Kirk, "You got to go blow up Benedict Cumberbatch
with these special drones,
with these special missiles I got." And but you got to get in there and make sure that, you know, the Klingons don't notice anything. But it'll be okay because this is an uninhabited part of the Klingon homeworld of Kronos. Yeah, and it'll be fine. And then Scotty resigns because he doesn't want to be any part of this thing with missiles and. This is, you know, we're explorers. This isn't military. And
yeah, that was
an interesting
stretch.
Commentary there.
Yeah, considering they're a warship, basically.
Well, I mean, the Enterprise is, you know, it depends what, you know, iteration is. It's supposed to be the flagship, and they were supposed to be beginning this 5-year mission, right? The framing was cool. Like, they thought, oh, this is going to be great. We're going to get more briefing on our 5-year mission, and then it turned completely.
But it's not even just that they're going to take this guy into custody.
They're
going to
go kill him.
Assassinate him with 72 missiles,
which is a stretch,
right?
And then I did like that little nod. Did you guys see the little all the little statues in RoboCop's Peter Weller's office?
Yes,
and they had the Enterprise from the TV series, the NX-01 or
it's
whatever.
Sort of like the Enterprise TV show, the opening, where you see like the history of space travel. And that's what it reminded me of, because you're seeing like the history of like NASA probes and satellites. Right. going up the shuttles. And then it ends with, what's that weird black Enterprise?
Exactly. And there, that was actually echoed in the very, very first Star Trek movie where they showed all the different Enterprises through history, including the ship. So that was kind of cool. And then, yeah, what is that weird black Enterprise?
He
wasn't trying to hide it, was he? It was right there in his office. For a secret ship. But
he's having like meetings in there. It's not even like his private, you know, study or anything.
So they capture Harrison, who gives himself up after a pretty awesome fight with a group of Klingons, which we can talk about later if we want. And we find out that Harrison's actually Khan, and that RoboCop is actually trying to start a war with the Klingons by having the Enterprise attack the planet and then and disabling it. The warp core is disabled, so they can't get away. So the Klingons will find them, kill them, and then attack the Federation and then start a giant war, which is what he wants.
Which sort of mirrors Star Trek VI?
Yes, it's Elements of VI, Elements of II, all crammed together.
The dad from that 70s show, isn't he in there?
Yes.
Yeah, Kurtwood Smith.
Yeah.
He was,
but as a president of the Federation.
Right.
Hanging out in Paris.
So it's this plot to start a civil war, but a war with the Klingon Empire.
Yeah.
And RoboCop is basically just trying to kickstart this war that's maybe going to happen anyway, but he wants to militarize Starfleet.
Yeah, exactly right.
And go from being scientists to being kind of conquerors, really.
Yeah.
Part of this is that they do some interesting things where part of that is from the incursion from the other timeline where Vulcan is destroyed, and that kind of, he says that sort of inspired him to do this, and that's why he woke up Khan. So my question for you guys, when did you figure out it was Khan? Because it's not when he says it. It's before that. It has to be.
I felt like it was just sort of permeating throughout. I mean, when he actually said it, I felt like relief. Okay, so it was actually him. Because, I mean, even when the film was announced and even when he was announced as the actor, all the buzz was that he was Khan. And he kept denying it and saying he was another character. But you couldn't help but feel like, who else could it be? There's only one other person that would carry there's only one person that carries that much weight in the Star Trek universe, and it's Khan. Right. And my gut was like saying, I hope they're not going to do it that way. But he's a great actor. He's super fun to watch. He's got an incredible gravitas. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't surprised, but okay, I guess that's the movie that we're going to watch.
I like when you said relief, because when they reveal it where they do, and it's deep into the movie, but it's not the end. I was glad for that. Okay, now we can get on with things.
Yeah, we can move on with
it. This isn't the final reveal. There is more here.
And the interesting thing, so we do, as we go through the plot, we find out that that was interesting, the 72 torpedoes are actually, you know, coffins, chirogenically frozen. I guess that's redundant. His other crewmates, and that's
from the Botany Bay, right?
Well, who knows? I mean,
we don't know where they're from.
This gets into the problem with the movie, and we might as well jump into it, because I think the main problem revolves around the use of Khan, is that you don't feel anything and you don't know anything. My girlfriend has never seen the original films, which we're going to rectify very shortly, but. So she had all these questions about Khan, and I was like, the problem is they don't tell you anything in this movie.
No.
There's no information.
It's not, and for anyone who's just listening to this without watching the movie, because maybe there's some people who do that, this isn't it's not like a direct adaptation of Wrath of Khan.
No,
this is like,
not at all.
There are people actually, you know, talking about it, rightly so, that it's actually sort of their version of Space Seed, the Star Trek episode.
Yeah,
from
that's
the original
a very
series.
Good point. That's right.
So it's not,
exactly
but
right.
there are of course elements of Wrath of Khan with the hands to the glass scene, which we'll talk about, I guess. But
it's just there's not much information. It's never really quite clear who he was, and I mean, unless you're filling in your own backstory from the old movie.
Well, they set up that he's, you know, sort of this eugenics experiment, that he's the Superman,
none
and they talk
it's
about
very
it
very clear to people who haven't. Talked to somebody who hadn't seen any of that, Space Seed or Wrath of Khan. It wasn't very clear who he was.
Some of those are throwaway lines, honestly, so you might be right. They might not pick up on those things. And maybe just me looking for it, because I know what to look for, I'm perceiving it. So that's a very good.
And as a result, you lose all of the emotion that comes from Khan as making an appearance.
Right.
To me, it just felt emotionally hollow. Like, you know, let's jump ahead to the end. So the end happens. They're fighting Khan. The ship is disabled. They can't go to warp because the warp coils are all misaligned. So somebody has to go into the warp core to realign them, but it's full of radiation. This may start sounding familiar to you if you've seen the Krathicon. But instead of Spock going in, it's Kirk. And he goes in and gets radiation poisoning and dies. And you know, that as they're recreating, basically shot for shot, the ending of Wrath of Khan, I just felt like there was no emotional attachment, because between Shatner and Nimoy, you had
all that history.
You had decades of history as
that. You had the three seasons of the TV show, all that time in between the first movie and then that movie. I mean, there's so much.
And the books and the comics.
Yeah, and so the books. Right, yeah, all that
so
stuff.
When Kirk
is this is two movies. You
hands
can't
up to the glass of the original, you felt that because it was a whole long thing. Here, it's kind of like, I don't understand why, you know, this movie hasn't earned this scene to me. And
that's the thing, it hasn't earned it. It's trying for emotional resonance that just isn't quite, that you want it to be there. Because those two deserve that kind of moment, but right. Just not right now. Like, they need more time. Like, if they do something like that in the third movie, you know, maybe, like, that there's more.
Maybe.
But, you know, well now it's kind of, you know, they can't go back.
Also, they kind of tip their hand anyway. So you have Khan on board. And then here's this crazy Superman creature, this eugenics experiment. There's all these military people in McCoy's medical bay. And then he's tinkering with a Tribble. And trying to see how his blood impacts the Tribble. It's like, dude, there's a bunch of people attacking us. We're in war. You're just playing around with the furry ball. And it was like, I mean, and as soon as he did that, when that scene started happening, I'm like, well, of course, first of all, Kirk can't die.
Right.
And so, of course, we already know that his blood is crazy. So the thing is, it was that moment happened way too close in proximity
right. To
make Kirk's death anything but. And I will give it to them. They kept Kirk dead for longer than I expected, but it still happened. You know, he still got woken up. But the thing is, that really amazed me was that Spock goes and gets help from Spock.
Well, that was the one scene I actually didn't like in the whole movie.
Yeah, it's like,
was it didn't serve any purpose in the story. It didn't. He didn't tell him any information. He didn't reveal anything. He didn't help in any way. And then he seemed to be very okay with letting the entire bridge crew know that there's another Spock from the future.
Yeah, that being said moment, that's supposed to be sort of like the, oh yeah, Spock, like he doesn't care. This Spock doesn't care about, you know, the Prime Directive. Like he's going to break some rules.
But he didn't so, do like, anything.
But
he doesn't.
You're right. Well, actually, he might, but off screen.
I think
what did Spock then know or do that he learned from that changed anything?
I mean, what he said is they blew up the ship with Khan on it. I mean, I think that he had to have said something, because then, you know,
they end that scene with Quinto asking Nimoy and
tell then, me how you did it.
Like, tell me how you did it. And then they cut away. So right. He says something. Connor, I understand. Like, I don't know what he would have said that amounts to much of anything, because the movie kind of unravels.
They should have made this movie Star Trek into fan service, because like the Tribble
and
Nimoy and all these things weren't necessary to plot other than as fan service. And I don't normally hate fan service as much as other people, but this really stood out to me as why is he in this movie and why?
My favorite thing, there's a comment on my review where someone said like it's a wink too far.
Yeah.
That would be the perfect subheading for this movie, Star Trek, a wink too far. Because it's you know, several too many nods to past history and to the Wrath of Khan.
The thing is, I like those things. I like nods. I like that stuff.
But when
it doesn't take away, and this, I thought that this was like a very jarring. At first, it was like, oh, hey, Nimoy, awesome. But then it's like, wait, what is he doing? Why is he here? And
it detracts from the.
Why is everyone now okay with the crew knowing there's someone from the future? Future Spock here in the world.
Yeah.
And I get that you need the generational handoffs. That's what happened with the movies where
we did it last time.
Yeah, exactly. You just have to do it once. The audience they're ready to move forward with this new cast. They're ready to keep going. And, you know, it was an empty thing. It was surprising, but the problem was Spock just sort of sat there, said 4 or 5 lines, and then the movie went forward.
Yeah,
was like it should have been cut. It takes away Spock's value as a character, because he needed to figure that out.
Yeah.
Old Spock was right. It's like, this is your destiny. You need to figure this out. Is now old Spock on speed dial whenever new Spock has a problem?
Right. Yeah, it takes away from a really graceful bow in the 2009 film, because he does, you know, the to boldly go mantra at the end over them leaving. And that's sort of him christening the ship. That's him breaking the bottle of champagne over their ship and saying, yeah, it's your turn. And and it's such a great way to end that Spock story.
Yep.
But like, the telling thing is that he's called Spock Prime. That's how he's credited,
right?
Because he's the first Spock, and he will. And thanks to this, thanks to some of the decisions they made in this movie, he retains his primacy. He's not allowing they're not allowing him to give over the Spock mantle to Quinto.
No.
Right.
Because he has to call and ask for help.
Yeah, exactly. And now I do need to back up a little bit and talk a little bit about the things I really did enjoy.
No, let's do that. Yeah. I'm starting to spiral. I don't want to spiral.
Yeah.
Right. Because I could have taken another take on the voiceover when he did the
thing. Yeah, that was weird. It seemed like he did it over the phone.
It wasn't a very good take. but let's not spiral.
Some of the moments, like when I first saw Uhuru and Spock having a relationship, like I really did feel like, what is that like? And then to see their little dynamic, and a real honest dynamic, they have a chemistry that I think actually really does work. And to see the little flare-ups of the relationship, I thought the scene between Kirk, Spock, and Uhura as they're going on that ship, where they're having the argument, Kirk's like, don't bring me into this. Like, it's like, who hasn't been in that position in the car where the couple is fighting in the back seat, and you're like, oh man, I don't want to be here. Like, and those things are so good.
Yeah.
And that takes the place of, in the original series and in the movies, Spock, Kirk, and Bones.
Yes.
Because Bones is sort of receded into the background a little bit. In this series,
he's not the third.
He's the comic relief.
Third wheel is Uhura, which is fine. You want more.
Which I miss, but I think Uhura definitely deserves the opportunity, and especially Zoe Saldana playing her, to have more involvement with that sort of trinity with those scenes.
But it also allows Bones to come in, kill it with a one-liner, and then leave again, and then come back in the next scene, kill it with another.
He's like
one-liner.
The Fonz. You don't need too much of the Fonz. I love Bones.
He is the Fonz. Perfect. It's a perfect analogy.
I love seeing the Dreadnought class as a kid. That was always like, I have an old manual from the 60s, and that was like, oh, the Federation did make a warship. And it's nice to see little things like that. That's deep, deep, deep Star Trek history to bring that class out. But it did have a third warp nacelle, and if I remember correctly, and I'm sad they didn't make it. But I am a little tired of the ship, this amazing ship, getting almost blowed up every single time. I'm glad it didn't go into San Francisco Bay. I thought that's what I was seeing in the trailers.
Right.
And
that was a fake out, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, it totally was. I did really think it was cool to see it underwater. It reminded me when I think it was Voyager, when they actually parked the damn thing on a planet. And I love seeing them use the ships in different ways.
Seeing it in different contexts, like when in the beginning, when it flies out of the atmosphere, and it sort of makes a difference.
That looks awesome. Every time you see it in an atmosphere, it just looks so cool.
And like, it's sort of like, I mean, even going back to the original series, it's sort of inspired, like the sounds, it's inspired by a submarine, really. I mean, that was the closest, you know, analog to it. So,
it's
and
like,
to,
like
to hear it strain. And,
yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the cast, which is still wonderful, as we said earlier, but also specifically Chris Pine, who continues to own this role. I mean, Shatner is Kirk. He will always be Kirk. Kirk will always be Shatner. But this particular version of Kirk, Chris Pine is wonderful, and he is absolutely wonderful. He's charming, he's roguish, he's funny, he's a little infuriating at times. He just owns it. I mean, he's a delight to watch on screen.
He's a really likable, well-rounded protagonist. Like, he makes mistakes, but you don't dislike him for it.
Right.
And I thought it was a really great glimpse into what being a true leader is, where he admits, look, I don't know what to do, I'm just going to do what I can do. And it was an insight into the Kirk character that Shatner never revealed, but was very much a part of the fabric of who he was. He was always making it up as he goes along. What can I do to beat that test, Kobayashi Maru? You know what I mean? Like, all of that stuff, that's really the spine of that character. And also his love of the crew. There was lots of stuff with Shatner's Kirk, whereas between him and the ship.
Right.
And I like how they pivoted just ever so slightly with it with its Kirk and his crew. And I loved that aspect to it. He's got such a looseness when he needs to be loose, and yet can turn things, dial things up just a little bit when he's in talking to other officers. That no wonder Pike sees so much in him. We see so much in him. We see so much capability and ambition and raw like ability that you can't help but root for him. And he looks fantastic on screen. He's a really charismatic actor.
Yep.
And he's a character that can get away with being in a threesome with two like twins with tails.
Oh, that was
but that doesn't like it doesn't detract from the character at all. Like, you know, that doesn't define what he is.
No, you just sort of say, oh, that's cool, and you move on. Like you don't even right. think about it. It's not even acknowledged almost. It was great. You're not going to answer that, are you? That's awesome.
I mean, the cast, everyone got their moment to shine. You know, Sulu being able to captain a little bit while Kirk was gone, and Chekhov sort of being shunted to the side, but still, you know.
I would say in comparison to the first one, yeah, the little less Chekhov.
But that
like Chekhov's moment in the first one where he saved them with the teleporter, like that was a big moment for him. This one, just catching them while they fell, that was kind of.
Well, that's the hard things with these films, balancing it out. And then when you have such a presence like Cumberbatch.
He was wonderful.
That who more than holds his own. I have to hand it to the writers and the producers for being able to give everybody as much time as they did.
Yeah.
Because in the original Wrath of Khan, Khan and Kirk are never in the same room. It's all done over Skype, basically.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So it's an old school submarine film.
Yeah.
Wrath of Khan. And this is the first time that we see Khan and Kirk together. It's since Space Seed. So that's why it's more Space Seed than anything else. Mm-hmm. But to see Pine and Quinto and them more than hold their own over what has to be one of a very compelling and very powerful actor of our time right now. I thought it was thrilling to watch.
Because I think Cumberbatch deserves, like, we need to give him and Khan a little bit more time because the character, it's such a good performance. I don't think the failing is at all in Cumberbatch. I think it's just in the concept from the script.
Yeah, no, he's great. I mean, he's wonderful.
He's like a great, like he's a different villain. Like it's like if he wasn't saddled with that name, like if he was like some other dude that they woke up from those pods, like they didn't wake up Khan, they woke up somebody else.
Yes,
they woke up Carl Noonien Singh. Like I say in my review, like it would have been fine. But like, or if he was like a Romulan or something.
Well,
like,
what if he just was John Harrison? Like, what?
Or if he was just if he was just John Harrison, perfect.
Well, that's my question for the film. Is
it's just like he's yeah. It's
if you change the name of the character, does it change the film any? And I don't think it does.
It's the ghost of Ricardo Montalban, and just like that.
Would the movie have been better if he had a fake chest?
No.
That, you know what? Wrath of Khan, that's his real chest. That's his real chest.
Was it a real chest?
I saw an interview, and that is actually Ricardo Montalban's chest. Well, but the thing is, that's why it's more spacey than anything else, because in Wrath of Khan, Khan had been dealing with living in those fierce remote desert, all of the storms, living stranded, and had become maniacal in his thirst for revenge. Now we have a much more balanced, calculating Khan, the original Khan from Space Seed, who is in a way far more terrifying. And I thought that's what he was really celebrating. But to your point, honestly, it didn't have to be Khan at all. And I felt very it was hard when Spock screamed the name. Yeah. I was like, that's not good. It's like the no in Star Wars 3. You know, I was like, come on, dude, that's not good. And the problem is the people who are writing this and directing this and producing this, they know those moments fall flat. I don't understand. These are people.
There's ways to do that. Like if you look at like Rise of the Planet of the Apes and they have, what's his face, Draco Malfoy screaming, get your filthy hands off me, you damn dirty ape. Yeah. That worked because it's a little campy.
Right.
This should never be that. The way they've set this up, the tone is such that you can't get away with it.
But again, I think it's all about whether or not it's earned. And I think when Kirk yells Khan in Wrath of Khan, it's completely earned. Everything about the pain he's yelling is real.
It's a different moment, too.
Whereas here, it's just like, there's all kinds of reasons for people to blame for this. I mean, he could have yelled out RoboCop. You know, yeah. it would have been just. I mean, it didn't feel earned. Also, those uniforms that they wore and the.
It's called the Vengeance. Is that what the Dreadnought ship?
The Dreadnought ship was whatever it was called. Those were terrible uniforms.
I didn't understand them at all.
I don't want to, and I don't want to spiral, but no. Peter Weller was really bad. I thought there were some scenes like when before his turn, they were like, all right, he's an admiral, whatever, he's a bureaucrat. But then, like, I think especially compared to the rest of this cast and compared to Benedict Cumberbatch, he just had no presence whatsoever.
Well, when he said, oh, shit, all right. You know, when he sits there, when he sort of deflates when they found, he realizes that they know who Khan is.
Yeah. Right.
I get why they did that, but it really jostled me out. That was not what should have come out of this kind of character's mouth. And I thought it was sort of a cheap way to do it, sort of humanize him in a weird way. I see what you're saying. I wasn't bothered by him.
I didn't mind him. You don't like Peter Weller.
He's kind of weird Paul. Looking.
I just felt like a wooden performance to me. I don't know. And then I also had like a very unresponsive audience, like at a very small
screen. We did too, actually.
And so maybe that had something to do with it. And I wasn't getting anything out of him or Carol Marcus.
What did you guys think of Zachary Quinto?
I thought he wasn't as good this time around as the first time around.
I have to agree with you. And I felt like he looked really odd and puffy.
I thought he gained some weight, which I was a little distracted by, which, you know, I'm not going to knock him for.
Yeah, I saw that too. I didn't include it in my review, but it was like...
It was really distracting, though.
His face was definitely
really distracted by it
last time, yeah.
And I felt like, I mean, there were moments that were good, but he felt adrift to me. Even the way he was standing, I just felt like he was distracted by something.
That's a really, really difficult role. Like, I mean, even if it was just Spock by himself, in the shadow, you know, in the shadow of Nimoy, like having to have bringing him back, it's just like it's he's second chair all the time. Like, it's unfair. Like,
well, but he got a whole huge, from a character point of view, he was in the chair, he saves the day, then he has a full on knockdown drag out fight.
Final fight, not Kirk. I mean, he's
even then,
yeah. I didn't like him as much this time, and I don't know if I can put my finger on exactly, but or exactly why.
I think there were too many distractions in the way of great character moments. There are great character moments in this movie, and I didn't hate it. I'm being very critical, but yeah. I was very excited about this movie, and I was disappointed and just frustrated.
I think that's exactly my reaction, because if you go back and listen to the show that me and Josh and Ron did in the first movie, or if you know me at all, mention the first Star Trek movie. I love that movie.
It's
I love it.
It's a great movie.
I was bouncing off the walls when I came out of that screening. How
much I am like, and then when people bring, you know, lodge certain criticisms against that film, I'm a total apologist for it.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
It's so much fun. And the thing is,
like, I do not care. Like, I don't care about coincidences. I don't give a shit. It's a great movie.
Mike and I and my girlfriend had dinner before the movie, like 2 hours before the movie. We were talking about it the whole time. We were excited. We were all hyped up for it. And I had a lot of fun at this movie. I think I had a lot of fun. But coming out of it, as soon as I started to think about anything, I went, oh, no.
It was like that moment. It's like when you started realizing how bad Superman Returns was, and how like
that's a really good example.
You liked it a lot when you left.
Exactly, I had the same exact experience. And but this was, I think I realized this one a little bit sooner. Actually while I was in the movie. But this is, you know, to Wrath of Khan what Superman Returns is to Superman the Motion Picture.
Yeah, I think. And it's a movie I'm gonna own. It's not a movie I'm going to watch nearly as much. I mean, I watch the first one probably once every couple months. It's a great movie to put on in the background while you're doing other stuff, but also to sit down and watch. And this is a movie I'm going to watch for parts. I'm going to watch it specifically for scenes, and then not for an overall movie experience. You know, interpersonal stuff, the fighting between Uhura and Spock. You know, the first sequence. I also really like the fact that they expand on the world a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, Shatner films went into the world a little bit, like onto the planet and into planet Earth and into the society, but not too much.
Yeah.
Whereas here we've got a kind of good sense of what life is like on Earth. Why are they ships still called USS ships if they're like a
United?
World? I know, but why? Aren't they like the Federation is the whole planet? Shouldn't they be? Anyway, that's been nagging me for 30 years. But
it was interesting, you know, see London and then just see the cars going around.
I liked all that stuff a lot.
And you see more of like, you know, like the tantalizing thing that Abrams sort of added to it in the 2009 film was that the motorcycle sort of chase with the robot.
Yeah.
Cops. So there's RoboCop and robot cops in this, and they served as like nurses,
yeah,
and like doctors in this. There were some of that they have like that one eye. Also, we need to talk about how Lobot is in this on the bridge.
Yeah, whoa,
that's weird because that's like that feels very not Roddenberry to me because
well,
it's a human. He was clearly human at one point. But then he's got like this,
brain implant or something.
Like brain implant, his eyes are weird, and he has that weird voice. I was like, that's like Lobot from Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
I know from the Star Wars lore that guy was human first, and then he got these augmentations or whatever, or he almost died or something, and then they did that. But that's kind of like that's kind of sinister.
He was almost like a prequel to Data in a weird way, and he had that weird vocoder effect on his, and just to have him talk once a while and have so many questions immediately the moment you see him, there needed to be some acknowledgement. I wonder if there's a scene in the editing room hard drive that is missing, because who the hell is that? What is that?
Yeah. Speaking of editing room hard drives, something from the last film that made it into this one, Klingons.
Yes.
Oh, and that was really interesting.
There were going to be Klingons.
I had talked. My buddy got married, and his cousin is Roberto Orsi, who helped produce and write this film. And okay. I talked to him at the wedding, and late at night, he went up to my Whitney and me, and he's like, "All right, any questions you got, I'll answer about the new Star Trek." And I was like, "Holy shit!"
Wow.
But Whitney and I didn't want any spoilers, so I thought long and hard, and I'm like, "Okay, how are you handling the Klingons?" And he looked at me. Sort of sighed, and he said, "They're wearing helmets." And I'm like, "You bastard!" So it was really interesting to see these helmets, because they were supposed to be in the first film. Yeah. They cut that scene, and
they
so
had kids playing them for like force perspective stuff. I remember that from.
Oh,
like,
really?
Yeah, they had little kids in costumes.
What was the scene they were in originally?
It was that's where Eric Bana ended up. Like for all that space between the beginning where he destroys Thor's ship, and then Kirk grows up, and he get like all that time he was supposed to be in a prison colony, like the Klingons captured them. So it's sort of like this weird hole in that you don't really think about from the first film, but yeah, he was in a prison colony, and they actually showed like them marching along, and it was little kids playing them in those helmets. So there was the same design.
I kind of wish they kept the helmets on for a sense of mystery. If for the third film.
Yeah,
I don't know what they're going to do in the third film. They don't even know probably what they're going to do. Maybe they do, but you'd think logically Klingons would have to be the thing.
I feel like there was an interview where Abrams talked about doing Star Wars and his next Star Trek. I feel like that was in the headline, but the Klingon War. Yeah,
you know, we first see the Klingons in this, and they're all wearing these helmets that are really creepy, and you can kind of see their mouths, and you can kind of see their eyes. And
yes.
I was hoping they wouldn't take them off, so you wouldn't actually see. You know, these redesigned Klingons until they were a big force, and they did. It was fine. I didn't mind the redesign. I mean, they were basically
they're like halfway between original series Klingons and
they had a glowing eye Klingon thing, and yeah, they should get the things on. I thought Uhura really did a good job with that scene. It's funny. Did you see it in 3D, Paul?
No.
It's funny to watch. We didn't see it in 3D either, but it's funny when you see some of these set pieces and you're like, oh, that's for the 3D shot. Like, because there are lots of like very busy frames in this film.
Yes,
like lots of cables and pipes. And of course, the warp core has to be in one of the most complicated, hard to get to places, which makes a certain degree of sense, I'll admit. But like, it was just funny to see the kind of like nods to making this kind of 3D friendly.
When Harrison or Khan puts his arm through the hole in the glass, right? Punching him in the face. I liked seeing the Klingons. It was a nice acknowledgement because that was probably the biggest hole of the world at that point we hadn't seen. We'd seen Romulans, we'd seen Vulcans, you know.
Right.
We'd seen Tribbles. And
we don't necessarily need Ferengi.
No.
Well, that's not a presence in original series anyway.
But, you know, I liked being back in the world. I liked being back with the characters. Overall, I had a fun time at the movies. It just, as soon as I think about it, it starts to sort of unravel.
Well, what frustrates me at the end of the day is I just wish it were back on TV, like on a cable network with 12 episode arcs and, you know, and just sort of because it's a world that is fun to come back to. There's way too many stakes and too many expectations when you get one film every 3 or 4 years. It's just, and you know, you've got two hours or so, if you're lucky, of Star Trek to enjoy.
Yeah.
And the problem is there's so many of us out there who grew up with at least seeing it once a week and living this idyllic future, because it's still very, and that's the wonderful thing. It does really still capture that idealism that humanity can do great things and can explore and reach out. And we need more of that in our science fiction and just in our normal, we just need more of it. And that's the wonderful thing about Star Trek. And it's like when I see Bones and go, God, I wish I had more Bones scenes, and God, I wish, you know, Sulu would and the Chekhov would have more scenes together. You see all this wonderful sense of like what could be, and yet you know you're not going to get it.
Oh, there's so a good example of that. Did you notice? I forget who says it. Someone said the mud incident.
Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, that's where they got the ship from the mud incident.
And right. Like, so it's like this. That's an example of the right way to do it. Like just a little throwaway line. It doesn't detract from anyone to that's not relevant for. But it's like I growing up, there wasn't a time when there wasn't a Star Trek show.
Yeah.
Like it was the Next Generation, and then overlapping stuff with, with Deep Space Nine and Voyager, and then Enterprise, which I didn't watch, but. But then it feels weird that there's no Star Trek show.
Yeah.
It's become the new normal now that there isn't one. But I really miss that time. And like you said, there is science fiction on TV, and you can find it in different places. And there was Battlestar Galactica for a while, but it's different. That's not that Roddenberry vision, which often gets in the way of creativity in a way. A lot of the writers talk about that Gene wouldn't have gone for that, and some of the producers afterwards said, we got to maintain Gene's legacy that humanity is like perfect and there's no infighting, and that gets in the way of drama. But it was great to see here, a great mixed cast, and like looking at the bridge and see people of all different nationalities.
Yeah. Even the one crazy lady with the gold skin, it's like, whoa.
Right. Yeah. And then like they open up their mouths and they have really weird vocoder voice.
Yeah. It's like, and then for some reason, Alice Eve is in her underwear for some particular reason. It's like, that was really gratuitous, I thought, just as a little parenthetical.
I think the main point is that this isn't three Star Trek fans not liking it because it's not.
I loved it. I mean, I loved going back and watching
it. Yeah, we loved that first movie.
Yeah.
I think it's just a disappointment that they went back to that. They had a really prime opportunity here to tell their own Star Trek stories, I think is what it comes down to for me. And going back and retelling them when they don't need. And that's the argument against any retelling, is they don't need to be retold. But the stories are there. They had a certain emotional weight for it because they got to tell them through TV and then through the movies. And might as well just tell your own stories. I mean, you got the whole new world with new characters. You did it the first time. You told an original story.
They surrender to temptation here.
Yeah,
that's the big thing. And seriously, it's the antithesis of Star Trek to go backwards. It's all about moving forwards. And so. There's so many things you can do, and like it's not like these writers aren't creative, but I think they surrender to that temptation to go back to the easy audience appreciation thing, like that fan service.
Yeah,
I'm hoping this is the Ocean's 12 moment where they, Ocean's 12 was way too sort of jokey and jokey and winky, Whereas Ocean's 11, even though Ocean's 11 was a remake, ironically, it felt very original. Ocean's 13, they righted the ship. I hope that with the third Star Trek film, they look at it and say, maybe we should tell a story that's completely our own and not try to go back and shot for shot, line for line, remake these classic Star Trek moments with this new cast, which just didn't feel right to me.
Sort of like they brought it back to... It's sort of like they're back to starting position.
Mm-hmm.
Like they had this great momentum from the end of the 2009 film, And now they're sort of back to that with the prospect of a Klingon war and the crew being all together and everything's galvanized. But the missteps of this movie add a wariness to my and a trepidation to my feelings about a third film.
And also, it's like almost like this whole film was a huge parenthetical because the universe isn't that much different at the end of this film than when it was at the beginning, right? It's just like, okay, well, they had this experience, but like now they can get on with the mission that they were talking about starting at the beginning of the film. And this thing kind of, it's like, you know, well, that happened. And I'm not sure what they learned and what where they go forward with now, just in terms of, the you know, even the ship was, it's not 1701A or anything like that. It just got rechristened. And it's like, okay, well, you know that thing that we were going to do last year? Now we can do it. We just got a little bit of delay. So it was that weird thing where, what did we learn from it? And I'm not sure yet. Maybe I know I'm going to have to see it again, but I'm curious to see if there are any repercussions just in terms of the characters as we move forward into the next film. But for me, it just is like, okay, well, that was an interesting diversion, but can we get back to exploring?
Yeah. You know, I'll still look forward to a third one because I love this cast. I love the characters. I love the world. So I'll want to go back to it for sure. I'll be a little bit trepidatious when they announce that, who the next villain is, if it's
right. Yeah, I just
if it's Chang, if it's from if they're if there's any familiar elements, I'm gonna get really worried.
I'm excited for a third one, but it just like it doesn't feel like going into this. It was like this is a sure bet.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, absolutely.
Like all the elements are in place. 2009 was great. They've got all these new additions that man, they're making great choices. So but now it's gonna be like okay, my expectations are tempered.
Yeah, when the film started, I cracked my knuckles. I'm like, okay, show me what you got.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, this is your opportunity, Kurtzman, Orsi, Abrams, Lindelof. Damon, Lindelof. It's like, this is your time to really make your Star Trek and make our Star Trek and make the millennials' Star Trek happen. Mm-hmm. This is it. This is the touchstone. And it, I mean, I guess it, quote unquote, opened soft with only, quote unquote, only 16.5 million. Yesterday, which is, you know, we're taping on a Friday and opening day, but like I hope it doesn't dissuade from them from really owning the idea and understanding that this is their time to make a true moment of legacy with these films, with the next one, because they had the opportunity and then they phoned Spock, and so you know what I mean, and just like
stop asking for permission.
Yeah,
you had our permission. Right. You had our permission. Go.
Wonderful way to put it. Yeah, go boldly. So
I think overall, it's a very complicated film that we had a very complicated reaction to.
Do you want to do numbers? Do you want to do stars?
I think your 3-star rating is pretty accurate.
Ooh, just like not even a 3.5?
No, I think 3 is pretty accurate. 3
and 3.5s are tough. Is it like same thing with Iron Man? It was back and forth.
If you go by the Netflix rating system, which is what I use, it's 3 as I liked it.
Yeah.
And I liked it. I had fun. I didn't love it for the reason.
I didn't hate it. I didn't not like it. I liked it. I didn't really like it, and I didn't love it. I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And I had gone into this not wanting to have any expectations, but as soon as the lights went down, I realized that I had a million, and that I really wanted to be taken away and see something new. And I can see where that 3 stars comes from, because I wanted new I just could not believe that I got old. Like
I think from, being next to the theater, I think we were both fully on board until they hit the first wall, which is Khan, and then hit the second wall, which was Nimoy, and then they hit third wall, which was recreating the scene. That cold open, we were psyched, you were bouncing in your seat, and it was
I was into it.
We were into it, and then they started hitting these walls. Actually, I'd call the first one a speed bump. We speed bumped it, and it slowed down a bit, and then we hit a wall, and then we sort of spun out.
There was a spike strip, and
there was fun elements in there, and I would I'm frustrated more than anything because of my love for that first one so much.
Right, right.
Yeah.
What can you do? Go to ifanboy.com and you can read Paul's written review of the film. It's got full of spoilers, like this review was. Because it was really, you're right. Once I saw the film, I was like, Paul's right. He couldn't write that review without talking about the spoilers.
I tried. I really did.
So go read that. And we will be back in about a month for Man of Steel, for which we saw the trailer before Star Wars, and it looks fantastic. Star Trek, and it looks fantastic on the big screen.
It's there is no bigger moment.
We are. I think the three of us are. There's few people who are more excited about this than we are,
and more terrified.
And more terrified. Yeah, same.
So we'll be back for that in about a month. Until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
I'm Mike.
Now is the time to journey home to tell of what I've learned. My people, I believe, have every right to be concerned. For in spite of computers and advanced psychology, behavior patterns are still a mystery. I predict the future of this earthly human race is that having made a mess of Earth, they'll move to outer space. Well, there goes the neighborhood. Totally, completely, absolutely, irrevocably, highly illogical.